Accession number 33206, reel 2.
Yeah, I'm in your hands. You,
Mr. Greet, reel 2. How do they go about teaching you drill?
Well, we had gunnery instructors who, just a normal drill, knowing how to slope arms, present arms, march, and marching was very, very important. You know, we were extremely efficient at marching and what have you. And it was all on the parade ground, the one I showed you just now. there we are on this parade ground. We'd spend, I can't remember exactly how much time, but a certain amount of time as a class being drilled. And that's really what it was, being drilled. Standing at attention, standing at ease. All the normal things that, you know, soldiers and sailors do in parade ground attitude.
And what about fitness? How do they keep you fit?
Running everywhere. Physical training. A lot of that. I mean, they wanted fit people. I mean, everything they did was geared to what they wanted. You know, efficiency in your job. Fitness. Liking what you were doing. You know, it was all... If you had any leniency, it was in what they wanted, you know, to keep you fit, to keep you... So we did a lot of fitness training. Everybody was very fit. And we did fitness training every morning on the parade ground. We did plenty.
Would they take you on route marches and cross-country runs, that sort of thing?
We didn't actually go on route marches, except when there was a special occasion. And I can remember when, I think, the Queen came. So for some time beforehand, we spent time marching on, what's the name of the common? There's a common in Portsmouth at Gosport. Anyway, outside of the establishment. And on a common with a road on it, until we became super, super, super efficient, so the Queen could see us at our best. But we never went on route marches as such.
Do you remember much about that visit from the Queen?
Do you what?
Do you remember much about that visit from the Queen?
No. I can remember marching on the common. I can remember marching in the establishment past the saluting base before the Queen came, rehearsing. And I can remember marching past the Queen, but I can't remember anything else about her. I don't think she didn't do anything with us. She went with the boys at the top. Yeah.
And what about weapons training? What weapons did they
use? Yeah, we did a lot. Mostly rifle, because at that time there weren't any submachine guns, or not that I know of. So really weapons training was really the rifle at that stage. Weapons training as such came later on, after we left the establishment and went to... the gunnery school and places like that, because one continued training all the time in the Navy. You know, I mean, the fact that you'd finished 18 months in St. Vincent was only the beginning. You, after that, you had more, much more specialised training, much more advanced training, etc. I remember one of our, is diverging a bit, but thinking of weapons... One of the things we did was the field gun competition. I don't know whether you know anything about the field gun competition, but you have a field gun and you run with it and you do all sorts of things with it. It's extremely dangerous. Taking off wheels, throwing it over throwing it over barriers and all sorts of things. And we had a competition. We won that most of the time because, you know, we kicked them into doing it. And, I mean, that wasn't exactly weapons training, but it was part of the fitness training and part of the competition. I mean, for them, competition was extremely important because it kept people on their toes and they, you know, they wanted to win. And so if we won, we got a special supper. And that's what we always wanted. So we had lots of special suppers. But, I mean, we were well fed anyway. But a special supper was rather something rather better. So
what was in that special supper?
Oh, I don't know. It was... Well, I think it changed a lot, but it was the best that the cooks could produce, you know, and it was a special supper. That's why it was so important. That was another thing they did, you see, that's to make you want to win, make you keen, make you feel it was important. And, you know, special supper was, at 16, you want a special supper. You want anything you can weed. You probably remember, I don't know.
What about anti-gas training? Did they?
Yes, we did that. Yeah, we had an anti-gas chamber. Go in with a gas mask on, gas in the chamber, tear gas. An instructor inside in a gas mask, who said, "Take off your gas masks." So you took off your gas mask before going out, so you could experience what it was like, you know, to have, you came out absolutely blind. But that was the way it was.
What about naval training? Did they teach you basic seamanship?
That was included. I mean, seamanship wasn't my actual job. It became my job later, but it wasn't my job then. But all sailors, no matter what their specialisation, had to do seamanship. So we did a lot of that, yeah.
What does that seamanship training consist of?
Anchors, cables, boats, mooring, unshipping the mooring, or anything to do with what was necessary in a ship to run it, really. I mean, it was very vast. We had all sorts of models, I remember, letting go of the anchor and all that sort of thing, you know. Boats, boat drill, lowering boats, lowering the sea boat. We didn't do as much as the seamen boys did, but we did enough to know what we were doing in a ship.
Okay, so how long were you at HMS St Vincent?
18 months.
And that was all just a basic training, did they?
Yeah. Well, we left. I mean, it was basic training, but it was advanced in so far as the specialisation was concerned. You know, I was a signal boy.
Yes. Did they start you on the signals training there?
Oh, yeah.
And
all day, every day. What did you say?
What did that signals training consist of? I mean,
signal training? Well, I mean, the signal branch was very important in a ship because it was a specialised job. The captain probably didn't know all about signals because it wasn't his specialisation. So we learned all about the books, the signal books, manoeuvring, making manoeuvring signals, anything to do with signals. Morse code, we all learned to do the Morse code. Semaphore, it doesn't exist anymore, but it did then, you know, making with a couple of flags. We did all that. And we became very, very efficient at it. I mean, we could signal to each other on the bridge by merely moving our fingers, you know, across another ship, another communicator. Signal training was very important to them that you left, you know, being well-trained. And we were well-trained.
And how did they go about teaching you Morse code, for instance?
We had little cubicles, all with a Morse key, and I think we started at the beginning, you know, A, B, C, D, what have you, but then we did something probably every day, I can't remember exactly how often, working up until, I mean, you could read it 24 words a minute, and transmit it 24 words a minute. So we became highly efficient at all communication, lamp training, you know, signaling by lamp. I could still do it if I had to, you know, such was the training. There we go. I mean, it was concentrated training in all forms of communication between ships. That's really the basis of it.
Did radio come into it at that time?
No. In the communication branch, we were divided into two. One was the signal side, and one was the radio side. So half of our class were radio, and half were visual signals. And I was a visual signal. So they learned the radio side. But, I mean, we were radio in the sense that we could transmit and receive, but we didn't go into radio in any depth.
I see. So you were just dealing with the different ways that you would use Morse code?
Yeah. And signals, flag signals. I mean, you had to learn flag signals. I mean, learn to read them, know where they were in the book, what they meant, what you had to do. You had to say to the captain, you've got to turn 90 degrees to starboard when I say so, and he would say, right, because you're reading the signals, and when the signal came down, it was the executive signal, say, executive signal, sir, and you'd say, right, and turn. You know, really the communication expert. He didn't pretend to be. He probably knew a lot, because he'd been through it all himself, but would rely on you normally. That was my experience.
Okay. Do you have any other memories or stories about your time at HMS St Vincent?
No smoking. 6 cuts on a bare backside if you were caught smoking. I never smoked inside. It was stupid. Punishment, jankers, it was called. We get 10 days. You get up at 5 o'clock, stand on the parade ground until 6, winter, summer, etc., doing nothing but standing there. 6 o'clock, you'd start cleaning the... We had an inside parade ground. Wasn't as big, of course, as the outside. Scrubbing the deck at 6 o'clock. It was all work. And you then joined up. You'd have breakfast. Joined up for... I think we did have breakfast, but it was a reduced one. And then you join up with your class for the training for the day. And then in the evening, you do 1 hour's drill with a backpack and a rifle and running over... Traveled over chairs and what have you. A lot couldn't stick that. And it was very, very hard. And the instructors were keen to make sure you couldn't do it. And but being fit, I could always do it. But it was a big struggle. And then you had a reduced supper and no sweet. But when I went up to the dormitory, all the boys had saved their sweets and... You know, we did it for each other. We were a class. We were geared to each other. I did jankers a few times, not too often, but now and again. What else was special? They had a canteen. We were paid 1 and 6 a week, 1 shilling and 6 pence a week. But with that 1 shilling and 6 pence, which of course was much worth more than it is today, we could buy a cake or something, and there was a photographic shop where we could have photographs taken, and we could buy photographs of the field gun crew, or you know, that sort of thing. So I spent a bit of money on photographs, but 1 and 6 a week. And when I became a leading boy, I got 2 shillings a week. And I felt rich. And there it was. That's what we got. But there was the canteen. And there was the photographic shop. I can't remember much else about what was available. I don't think anything was. But there we go. There wasn't anything else outside of the normal that I can remember. There was the boat work in the harbour at Portsmouth, which I successfully avoided most of the time, but not always. Huge naval cutters, big boats with oars weighing half a ton that you had to go and row around the harbour and enjoy it. But I say I dodged it a lot of the time, but it existed. And we had football matches. We belonged in leagues and things, and that took time. And we used to travel away for that sometimes. But, I mean, we were very carefully supervised. We go in the coach with half a dozen instructors and people, you know. So there was no chance of doing anything other than what you wanted. But it was okay. I enjoyed it.
Okay. Did you have a passing out parade at the end of your time?
Yes.
At that base?
Yes. The captain made a speech and wished us all luck, and we marched past and we did all sorts of things on the parade ground. Yes, we had a passing out parade. There was a certain amount of reluctance. We'd been together for 18 months and we knew each other very well. And although we all, I'm sure, wanted to go on, after all, the point of joining the Navy was to go to sea, not staying in an establishment, that we wanted to go on, but there was a certain amount of reluctance because we'd been together for so long, and we split up when we left. We went to different ships and things. And unfortunately, my good friend and I went to different ships, which was one of my regrets. You know.
So where were you posted? When did you leave? When did you leave HMS St Vincent?
After 18 months. It was in the winter. I joined there in 36, so it was in 37, November or December, in the winter. And that was important because my first ship was a training battleship called the Iron Duke, and it was up in Scapa Flow in the north of Scotland, and it was the middle of winter, and we continued our training. It was much easier because then we stopped calling everybody sir and running everywhere, and we were allowed to smoke, and it was a bit much more relaxed. But we still did things which were suitable for boys under training, like scrubbing the deck in the middle of winter, anchored at Scapa Flow, scrubbing forward, scrubbing aft, bare feet, trousers rolled up, and quite an experience. It's something I remember very well. Used to, at the end of the scrubbing forward and aft, one couldn't feel one's feet. It was difficult to get down the ladder to go and have breakfast. And it was tough. And we continued training in the Iron Duke, but this time at sea. We're starting to learn about ships, which was part of the training. And I did that, I don't know, I can't remember, it's in here somewhere. I went to the Iron Duke for HMS Iron Duke. just a month. October, November. It was probably 2 months. Yes, it was 2 months I spent in Iron Duke. And then I went to the Mediterranean.
What sort of training were you doing on board Iron Duke? Sorry.
Oh, we continued our specialisation training. We started to learn about ships. We, started to teach us about ships. A certain amount of seamanship. I can't remember in detail what we did, but we always continued specialisation training right the way through until you become the top.
What was Iron Duke like? What sort of ship was
it? It was a battleship. I think she was sunk during the war in Scapa Flow. It was torpedoed, I think, by... I think, but don't quote that because I'm not absolutely sure it was her. I know the Royal Oak was in Scapa Flow, sunk by a German U-boat, Prien, who went in through the nets and sank Royal Oak with terrible loss of life because it was at night. And they were all on board and turned in. I don't know what happened to the Iron Duke. I think she sank or something. I mean, she was past her life anyway. She was just used for training.
What was your accommodation like on board?
Hammock. That's it. Mm-hmm. Simple. I mean, you learn to hang a hammock and to... I've forgotten the expression now, to tie it up in the mornings when you got out, had to be done a certain way. Had to, I remember the line, you had a rope, the line went round the top, and then you had 7 turns round the hammock, and you finished up around where was the top there, and tucked in all the bits and pieces that hung. Because it was important that the hammocks were, A, for neatness, of course, the Navy was all for neatness, and B, the hammocks were used if you were damaged in any way, you know, to block up holes in the side and what have you. It was very important that hammocks were done properly and were all available for stacking or what have you. And so we were... I slept in the hammock for some time. And the ships then, they're now modern ships, they have bunks. But they didn't then. A bit like Nelson, you know, you slept under the gun. Yeah. So that was the accommodation.
Very comfortable hammocks.
Yeah. But you can only lie one way on your back. But they're comfortable. And the sides... You know, it came up here, so you were shielded from noise and or anything. Sides. No, a hammock was very comfortable. I enjoyed hammocks. Had to get in, of course, by lifting yourself on the hammock rail and dropping in. So you had to be fit, otherwise you couldn't sleep. Yeah.
Okay, and did you go off to sea?
Not in the Iron Duke. Well, yeah, we did go to sea, but only locally. You know, we... But from there, after 2 months, I went to the Mediterranean. And in the Mediterranean, I joined... another battleship. HMS Iron Duke. Oh, no, sorry. HMS Barham. Barham. She was sunk during the war. I was in her for 3 months. So I started to learn about battleships. They don't exist anymore. Then I went from the Barham to the Warspite, which was another battleship. And from the Warspite to a cruiser called Penelope. And you must remember, 36, I joined the Navy. We were approaching the war. And quite a lot was going on in, you know, not actually in preparation, but in expectation of something might happen. I mean, I didn't expect anything. I couldn't care less. We didn't really follow any news or anything else. So you get newspapers or... things like that, you just didn't bother with that. But when I joined Penelope, she was a super ship, and I always regard her as my best one. She was super efficient. Disciplined, up to a point, and she was a good ship. And I played football for the ship, which gave me a certain amount of this and that. But we did a lot of exercises. We spent a lot of time at sea, which I suspect now, could have been in preparation for what might come. And in fact, in 1938, when I was in Penelope, there was the scare that we were going to war, and Chamberlain went to see Hitler and got a piece of paper which said they weren't going to war. But because of the 38 crisis, we were a bit involved. All the ships had a war station. And at that time, the Mediterranean fleet was huge. I mean, battleships, aircraft carriers, cruisers, hundreds of destroyers, you know. Grand Harbour at Malta was always absolutely jammed with ships. We all had a battle station, and ours was port side to guard the canal. So in 38, I mean, I don't know whether you're interested in how they got all the sailors back to the ship in 38. Everybody was down the gut, you know, in Malta and enjoying themselves. And then the crisis came, and everybody was recorded. I was in the cinema by chance, and it flashed on the screen, you know, back to your ships. And they had loud hailers going round and all sorts of things. And there were thousands of sailors because it was a big fleet. And some were drunk, some weren't. And they all streamed out of the gut. I can remember them very clearly. Everybody streaming down to the jetty to get a boat back to their ship. And it was an absolute shambles. You know, a boat would arrive from Penelope, for example, and they'd say, HMS Penelope. Well, I mean, there were thousands of sailors. You had to get through all this lot, some drunk, some not, to the boat. But it really was an experience of getting back. Everybody got back to their ships, and the ship sailed. And we went to Portside, and we just sat there because nothing happened in 38. We just sat there doing nothing, playing deck hockey and things, and finally it was all over. He got his piece of paper, and we all went back to Malta. But you know what happened after that. It deteriorated rapidly. Anyway, Penelope, I was in her up until Penelope. Came back to England in August 39. Well, you probably don't remember, but the war started in September 39. So I was in Portsmouth a month, about some weeks, before war started.
Okay, can we just look a bit more at your time aboard those other ships in the Mediterranean? You mentioned that you did a lot of exercises aboard those ships.
Yeah.
What were those exercises?
At sea. Gunnery exercises, anti-submarine exercises, all sorts of exercises that ships do. I mean, we were... I don't know whether it was due to the proximity of the war, but certainly they must have had some idea that, you know, we've now got to be even more super fit than we were. I mean, we're the best Navy in the world, there's no question. And they wanted to stay the best Navy in the world. And all ships were efficient. I mean, at the beginning of the war, you could safely say that Navy was ready. The Navy was always ready. They didn't have enough ships, finally, because, you know, there were the demands were too high. But they were ready, and we were ready. You know, we should say, hell with it, if it comes. After all, that's what we joined for. And there we go.
What would you personally be doing during the exercises?
On the bridge, reading signals, communicating with officer of the watch, captain. Mind you, I was only a junior signalman, but I mean, we were all highly trained, and we all had our responsibilities. And I'd probably be hoisting flags or making signals or more of that than, you know, advising the captain at that stage. Doing what the petty officer was called a yeoman in the signal branch, and the chief petty officer was called a chief yeoman, and he was the captain's right-hand man. And we would answer signals, make signals, depending, you know, we were pretty busy all the time. And at night, making signals with little lights, and, you know, life was very difficult with the light, with binoculars. And we were busy, yeah. making and receiving signals.
And what was the role of the Mediterranean Fleet?
Well, I mean, it was just part of the Navy, but presumably the fleet was made up of what their lordships considered to be necessary if there was war, you know, in the Mediterranean. And also, of course, the Mediterranean was a good place for training. We had more good weather there than they had in the North Sea, for example. So maybe that was, I don't know, but maybe that was one reason, because there was more opportunities for training. But it was a big fleet. So.
Okay.